Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good afternoon and welcome to this afternoon's episode of Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. On this hour of today's program, we will be talking about what the Department of Justice is doing to Dr. Monica Miller and the work that she does through Citizens for a Pro-Life Society. This week, she learned that the DOJ had begun legal proceedings against her personally and Citizens for a Pro-Life Society. And we'll talk about this in greater detail. But this is a call for prayer and a call for action towards true justice in this nation, if there ever was one. And then after that, we'll talk with Stephen Barr about the meeting point of faith and the sciences. And then at the last segment of this hour, we'll be joined by Dale Alquist to talk about the Chesterton option, because on May the 29th, we would have celebrated the 150th birthday of G.K. Chesterton. He's one of my favorite classical authors, and I consider him a bit of an artist when it comes to elucidating complex thought in a very commonsensical manner. In his essay, Why I Am a Catholic, perhaps one of my favorite essays to draw from of his wisdom, he opens by saying this, and it's a very famous quote of his. He goes, "The difficulty of explaining why I am a Catholic is that there are 10,000 reasons all amounting to one reason, that Catholicism is true. I could fill all my space with separate sentences, each beginning with different words, but they are only large attempts to change the world from the inside. But at the end, it is because Catholicism is true." Now, he goes on to elucidate a lot of other sub-reasons within this larger reason. But the fact of the matter is, G.K. Chesterton was a pursuer of truth. And that pursuit of truth led him through various paths down to the road home, through the road Rome, the road to Rome. And as he entered into full communion with the Church, he became one of her strongest apologists and commentators in the popular sphere, in the public sphere. He became a great influence in the eventual works of people like C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien, and his voice continues to echo to this day. His work, Orthodoxy, is still in print and widely read across the world. I want to invite all of us to try to find ways in which we can glean from the wisdom of G.K. Chesterton. And we'll have more on that in the third segment of this hour. For now, let's take a look at the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, May 30th. It's the Feast of St. Dipthna. Today's news is brought to you by Ave Maria University. Your vocation location is at avemaria.edu. The jury has reached a verdict in former President Trump's hush money criminal case. It will be read shortly inside the New York courtroom where the trial has lasted for about 5 weeks. A top Israeli official says the war in Gaza will probably last another 7 months as U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken questions what the plan is for what happens after the fighting ends.
We need to get, as quickly as possible, a plan for the day after that does not leave Israel responsible for Gaza, which it says it does not want to be. But if it is, it will simply have an enduring insurgency on its hands for as far as one can see into the future.
Israel's national security advisor made the claim Wednesday on public radio. He added that Israel doesn't want to rule Gaza and claimed that the 2 million residents of Gaza have been held hostage for 17 years by a murderous terror group. North Korea has launched 10 short-range ballistic missiles into the Sea of Japan. South Korean officials condemned today's launch and promised to respond to any provocation. The Japanese Prime Minister called the launches a violation of UN Security Council resolutions. The Buffalo Diocese is merging and or closing about a third of Western New York's 160 parishes. The plans don't specify which locations could be downsized, but there'll be about 106 parishes left. The list of parishes closing and merging is expected to be finalized by September 1st. Pope Francis has revealed his monthly prayer intention for June. Throughout the month, the Pope is inviting others to pray for those fleeing their own countries. Francis says those who are forced to flee their homeland because of war or poverty often feel like they don't know where they belong. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. Prison sentences have started for the 9 pro-lifers recently convicted of violating the FACE Act, the Freedom of Access to a Clinic Act. And this week, Dr. Monica Miller learned that the Department of Justice has begun legal proceedings against her personally and her nonprofit, Citizens for a Pro-Life Society. She joins us today. Dr. Monica Miller is a dear friend. She is the director of Citizens for a Pro-Life Society and the author of many books, including The Authority of Women in the Catholic Church, Abandoned, The Untold Story of the Abortion Wars, and Theology of the Passion of the Christ. Her most recent book is on the first three chapters of the book of Genesis. You can check out her work at prolifesociety.com. Monica, great to have you on the program.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, this is quite the uphill battle. So let's start by talking about the pro-lifers, who've been sent off to prison and the sentences that they faced, and then the bomb that was dropped on you this week after.
Right. Actually, it was last Monday, not this week Monday, but the Monday before. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's talk about there are 9 pro-lifers in Washington, D.C. They did a rescue. It was not a Red Rose rescue, okay? They did a rescue in which they actually blocked the hallway that led to the abortion rooms, and they knew that they were going to get charged with the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act. This is called mm-hmm. the FACE Act, signed into law by Bill Clinton on May 20th of 1994. But what happened, literally unprecedented in the history of the pro-life movement and legalized abortion, these rescuers were also charged by the Department of Justice under the Biden administration with conspiracy to interfere with civil rights. And that carries a 10-year jail term and a $250,000 fine maximum. Now, the FACE law is maximum 1 year. So I was in Washington, D.C. for 10 days. I was at all of the sentencings. Eight of the pro-lifers were sentenced last week, and some of them the week before. And then tomorrow we have the final pro-lifer, Paulette Harlow, who will be sentenced. She's sentenced tomorrow at 2:30 Eastern Time. For her part in this rescue, we really don't know what to expect. What's going to happen with Paulette? So I really, we have time now to pray for the judge. Her name is Colleen Coley Cotoli, Collar Cotoli, and she's a federal district judge in Washington D.C. So this is very serious. The maximum sentence was given to Lauren Handy. She actually is a friend of mine. She's done Red Rose rescues. And she received 4 years, 9 months. And then the next harshest was Jonathan Darnell. He helped her plan this rescue, and he has 34 months. Some of the other rescuers have 27 months, and one of them has a 21-month jail term. Now, they've all been in jail since August and September of last year. I was at their trials, and so they've been in jail all this time in the local D.C. jail, and then some of them in the Alexandria, Virginia jail. So they were going to get the 9 months credit off of their formal sentences now. Mm-hmm. We don't know where they're going. They have not been moved yet. And so we again, please, please keep these rescuers in your prayers. Let me also mention that Father Fidelius Moshensky of the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal, he is also in jail actually for a probation violation for a Red Rose rescue that he did, and he will be out, thankfully, in 11 more days on June 10th.
So I
can digress a little bit here. People might be wondering why. They conducted a sit-in. Imagine that. Now, Red Rose rescues, we don't block anything. Or in a Red Rose rescue, and we'll get to that a little bit later in this interview. But a Red Rose rescue is a handful of pro-lifers will go into the waiting room of the abortion center, sit down quietly as possible, try to talk to the moms in those last few minutes before they're literally going to walk down the hallway of death, to give them that final opportunity to turn away from their abortion decision. We have had women leave. We hand them out. We give out roses, ergo Red Rose Rescue.
Right.
And so it's a different way of doing a rescue, okay? And maybe some of the listeners here might be familiar with the rescue movement. I mean, it was, in its heyday, literally tens of thousands of pro-lifers were blocking doors to abortion centers.
Right.
They would only face maybe a city ticket for trespassing or a Class B misdemeanor for disorderly conduct or trespassing. But the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act really did change things, because now you could be a felon on your second offense under FACE and face much more serious jail time in federal prison. But in the recent years, Marcus, since 2017, there has been a resurgence, a small one, but there's been a resurgence of rescues, both what are referred to as the traditional rescue, where you actually put your body, sit down or you stand in front of the door to the abortion center, or the Red Rose Rescue, which we don't do any physical obstruction of any kind. But we'll get to that issue a little bit later in this interview. I would like to actually read something to you, Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
I do have an article currently in Catholic World Report that talks about what happened in the federal court regarding these sentences that were handed down in the last couple of weeks. Pro-lifers sent off to prison, witnesses of light in the darkness. So it's still up on Catholic World Report, and you probably have a link to it on the Ave Maria radio
website.
Yes, we do,
and we'll have it in the description of today's program as well.
But the first rescue I did was decades ago, 1978. And this was, at a time when everything was fresh, everything was new, we were filled with all kinds of hope and all kinds of optimism that we would have if we get arrested, okay, we did this rescue at the Concord Medical Services. Thankfully, it's a closed clinic now in Chicago. Joseph Scheidler, the late Joseph Scheidler, organized it, and I participated in it. And we were convicted at the lower court level, but we were not, discouraged by that, because we just believed in the truth. The truth is going to prevail. Okay, what truth? That the unborn are human beings, they are persons, and we are going to be able to show the jury the facts of fetal development and the humanity of the unborn child, and we would have a defense of necessity, and we would be acquitted on behalf of the babies that we tried to defend.
Right.
So we had an appeal. So we go up to the Illinois Appellate Court, and we ran into a wall. and I don't know if I have time before the break to read this. It's short. But the attorneys for the abortion clinic came up with what now is the standard argument. Anytime a pro-lifer goes to court, this is what you're going to face. You're going to face the standard argument that the unborn have no rights.
Yeah.
And so when we go to court, we can't have a defense of necessity or what's other
That's right.
sometimes referred to as a defense of others.
That's right.
And so
you can't argue.
I would like to read what did these attorneys, what was their argument? It's absolutely unbelievable what they said.
Mm-hmm.
But they said they're addressing the Illinois appellate court on behalf of the abortion clinic. As behavior protected by the Constitution and regulated by statute in every state, abortion cannot be defined as public or private injury. As we have shown, the defendant's contention that the fetus suffers great injury has no meaning for this court, nor does it qualify as the requisite injury to justify the assertion of the defense of necessity. The fetus has no rights, nor does the state or any individual have an interest in protecting the continuation of fetal development. During this period, the mother's individual rights are absolute. The only rights involved in an abortion performed are the rights of the mother. As defendants stated in their memorandum, their actions were calculated to save the lives of these unborn children. Defendants' acts were intended to protect non-existent rights and prevent the exercise of rights guaranteed by the Constitution. Okay.
Yeah.
Right there, we are living in la-la land, okay?
Well,
no injury is caused when abortions are performed. Right,
right, because
nothing,
there's a refusal.
We are defending no one, and we are defending against no injury. It's madness. It's insanity. And the killing of the unborn is built on this lie, this insanity, Marcus.
Now, Monica, before we go on, I don't want to detract from what these nine pro-lifers are doing, but the Department of Justice is doing some unprecedented things to get involved in this, and especially with how they've approached you and Citizens for Pro-Life
Yes.
Society. So what's been going on there?
Well, a week ago Monday, we found out that the Department of Justice is suing me, Citizens for Pro-Life Society, Red Rose Rescue, and six other pro-lifers for rescues we did in Ohio.
Yeah. Well, Monica, we'll have a conversation another time because we do need to address that. My guest, Dr. Monica Miller, Director for Citizens for Pro-Life Society and author of many books. I'm Marcus Peter for Cresta in the Afternoon.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. St. John the Apostle records the John chapter 6 Bread of Life discourse, in which Jesus states that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. Who better to understand John's writings and subsequent teachings than a disciple and student of John, St. Ignatius of Antioch? In his letter to the Smyrnians in 110 AD, Ignatius writes, "I have no taste for corruptible food, nor for the pleasures of this life. I desire the bread of God, which is the flesh of Jesus Christ. And for drink, I desire his blood, which is love incorruptible." The Catholic Church absolutely follows St. John and St. Ignatius in taking Jesus at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomio.
A conversation I had several years ago with one of our listeners who wrote to me and said she was being challenged by a friend or a cousin or someone regarding the church and various teachings, especially on marriage and abortion and whatnot. And she said, "I need the answers and I need them quickly because I want to quiet this person and shut them down." And I wrote her back and I said, "I'm not going to give you the answers. I will give you some resources, such as the link to the Catechism of the Catholic Church." And I said, "But you need to look these up and you need to read them over and you need to learn them, because this is not going to be the last time that you're going to be challenged or questioned about your faith. And what good is it if you're just barking answers to someone and you're not able to explain them charitably? This is a way we all should learn by doing the work ourselves."
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. The Catholic tradition has always had much to say about the relation of science to the faith. The Church has never shied away from the rapprochement between reason and the faith. And from the earliest times, Christian writers have emphasized two ways the natural world points to a creator. Stephen Barr joins us and also looks ahead to a conference of Catholic scientists. This is one of those conferences that I humbly urge you not to miss if you can attend. Stephen Barr is professor of physics and director of the Bartle Research Institute at the University of Delaware. He's the president of the Society of Catholic Scientists and author of best-selling books on science and religion, including Modern Physics and Ancient Faith, and The Believing Scientist. Follow his work at catholicscientists.org. Stephen, great to have you in the program again.
Well, it's nice to be on. It's good to meet you.
It's great to have you on the program again. We spoke once before.
Oh, we did. Okay. It's a sign of my age.
I was trying very politely to try to remind you we have spoken once before. But, I mean, I'm also a fan of a lot of your work, and I follow a lot of your work, so I'm more familiar with you than vice versa. So let's talk about your newest article, The Short Introduction of the History of Faith and Science in the Catholic Tradition. Because,
right,
as you well know, there is this common misconception that no matter how much history and truth proves otherwise will always abound, that the Church for some reason is completely fideistic and therefore irrational and irrational. And we know for a fact this isn't the case.
Right, right. Yeah, so that article was on the website of the Society of Catholic Scientists, and it was sort of an overview of how the Church has looked at science for the last 2,000 years. And as you say, the Church has always given reason its due, you know, and one of the themes of Catholic theological writing on this subject is that God is the author of two books, the book of the Scriptures, but also the book of the universe or the book of nature, mm-hmm. and that these two books cannot conflict because they both have God for their author.
So that's
the theme of the article, yeah.
Right. So absolutely, that because God is the common author of both these books, they not only don't stand in contradiction, they're actually harmonious. They work in a kind of symbiosis with each other. They feed off each other. In fact, Revelation can rightly be built off of nature if nature is understood well. So share about how you've experienced that.
Right. So, I mean, both books, as St. Augustine pointed out, are difficult to read. Not everybody reads the book of Scripture correctly. Not everyone. And it takes a lot of effort and time and research to read the book of nature correctly. So, I mean, because it's possible not to read them correctly, there are times in history where people come to the conclusion that they're saying different things. That, you know, it's what they think, science and divine revelation are somehow conflicting. But, you know, the better we understand both books, the more we see that these tensions or apparent conflicts tend to evaporate with time.
Right. Right, so Stephen, talking about exactly that then, Augustine famously said, credo ut intelligunt, I believe that I may understand. And in your work as a scientist, you've come to realize that casting out the notion of the metaphysical and a sense of belief in a creator that's beyond the empirical tends to create a reductionistic paradigm for doing science that's sometimes destructive. So how have you seen that?
Well, I don't think that science itself is harmed by that. That is, I think science, I'm talking about the physical sciences and mm-hmm. the natural sciences. Things can be a little trickier when you get to the social sciences.
Because
they tend to be, corrupted by ideology more. But when you're talking about physics and chemistry and things like that, biology, I think the sciences do their job quite well. So that's not the problem, is that science isn't done properly. But people can draw the wrong philosophical conclusions from science. Mm-hmm. So the reductionism is a problem when people think that all there is to the world, all there is to man, is what the natural sciences tell you about it. So I mean, we see that today, for example, where a book I just reviewed for First Things, or it's going to come out in a few months, a book that's making a big splash is a neuroscientist at Stanford has written a book, a 400-page book, saying that neuroscience shows that we have no free will. Now, it's not that neuroscientists are doing their job wrong, but this neuroscientist is taking what science has told us and mm-hmm. extrapolating wildly from it.
Right.
To conclusions that really don't follow from the science and coming to certain, as you say, reductionistic views, that we are nothing mm-hmm. but a bunch of neurons and that's all there is to us. So, when people take the findings of science and they draw false conclusions from them because they have a messed up philosophical worldview, that's mm-hmm. the problem. The science itself tends to be done well. It's what people do with it that's really can be a problem.
Right, and this problem of applying the principles of the sciences to suit one's preconceived philosophical ideologies, or in the case, as you've mentioned, by a scientistic philosophy, and therefore, you know, an uber-empiricist one, not only results in a kind of reductionistic way of using the science, it also brings about a real detriment in the way human beings wind up living.
Yes, I mean, if people come to the conclusion that they don't have free will, or that they were nothing but, you know, we're nothing really different from ChatGPT, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, except that we're made of flesh and blood and bones, and they're made of something else, but that basically we're just computers. Yeah, so it can have devastating effects on people, on the way they see the world, the way they live their lives. It is a problem. So that's something we have to push back against, and that's one reason we've founded the Society of Catholic Scientists, is to do good science, to show that we want to show that science does not imply a lot of the things that people mistakenly think that it implies. That actually, when you understand what science is discovered, and you understand it properly, it actually quite coheres with what we believe as Catholics. It's really not contrary. It doesn't in any way. It's not in any way inimical to Catholic belief. But that's why we exist. One of the reasons the Society of Catholic Scientists exists, to show the harmony between faith and science.
Right. So, in the interest of furthering the dialogue of the harmony of faith and science, the Society is putting forth this conference. So tell us about the conference.
Yeah, so this is our seventh conference. We started in 2016. So this is a seventh annual conference, and it's in Mundelein near Chicago. We're all booked up now, but we will live stream the talks on our website. And so we have about 110 of our members, scientist members, attending, and there's going to be a whole lot of very interesting talks. About I think there's 13 talks and about 30 poster presentations. It could be quite interesting. Actually, 5 of the 13 talks have to do with artificial intelligence because that's a pretty hot subject right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very good Catholic philosopher, Alexander Proust, is going to talk about that from a philosophical point of view, and we have a number of people who work in computer science giving talks about how do these things like ChatGPT and so on work. And then we have a talk by one of the top evolutionary biologists in the world. He's a professor at Harvard. I think he's regarded as one of the top evolutionary scientists in the world, is giving the first talk. I think it's called Does Evolution Lead to God or something like that. And we have a talk on does neuroscience show that we don't have free will? We have a talk by a neuroscientist on that topic. We have a talk by a lady who's a professor of biology at UC Irvine and who's a convert to the Catholic faith, and she's going to give a talk on conversion, of scientists, how scientists undergo conversion. And so there's a whole lot of interesting talks that we're going to have.
Right. And, it's Dr. Bolson, right, who will be giving that?
Yes, Suzanne Bolson. Right. And I forget the title of her talk. It's something, but she's a convert, but she's very, in addition to being a very good scientist, she knows a lot about Catholic theology. So some of the people she's going to talk about who are converts to Christianity include, I think, Cardinal Newman, and St. Augustine, and I think Avery Cardinal Dulles. She's talking about the act of faith, what's involved in assenting to the faith.
Right, the nature of assent, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's going to be quite a theologically informed talk. I'm looking forward to that one.
I also think it's crucial that Dr. Proust is going to be discussing how humans are not machines. This is one of those age-old conversations that with the advances of the empirical sciences, and especially the mechanical sciences, there will be a point where we'll be able to, quote-unquote, overcome the weaknesses, end-quote, of the human nature. But this definitely would be one of those talks that would enlighten that area.
Yeah, I mean... Right. I mean, there's a lot of people who are beginning to wonder, are we nothing but machines ourselves? And is there anything about the human mind that can't be done by computers?
Right.
And maybe better in some cases, in many cases, than our minds, the way our minds work. And there are very strong arguments, philosophical arguments, go back all the way to Aristotle, but... some of them have a more sophisticated, modern form of the argument that say that, no, there's something about human mind. This is something about human beings that cannot be replicated by machines. And in particular, from a Catholic point of view, in particular, it's our reason, our capacity to know the truth, to understand, and to know the truth. And our free will. And so there are aspects of human beings that no computer can reproduce.
Right, right.
Yeah, so that's very important. It's certainly extremely timely now. It's not just timely now. I think it will be an important question going forward.
Stephen, I'm going to have to cut you off there. The music's hitting. We're coming to a hot break. Thank you for joining us. My guest, Stephen Barr, professor of physics and director of the Bartle Research Institute and director of the Catholic Scientists Association.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu. The Encounter Conference, June 26th through the 28th at the New Glass City Center in Toledo, Ohio. 15 powerful speakers.
It is the encounter with the Holy Spirit that makes Jesus come alive and gives us the courage and the wisdom to go forth and to even risk our own lives.
Everyone pretty much says the miracles that Jesus did are real. The miracles that the early church did are real.
As often as the popes are talking about the new evangelization, they're also saying we need to pray for a new Pentecost. We need to return to the upper room. Encounter represents the church returning to the upper room. As we're coming boldly before God and asking Him to renew that Pentecostal fire for the strength, the gifts, and the wisdom to be able to preach Jesus to a lost and broken world so that we can become fully alive in Him, so that the world may come to believe that Jesus is the one whom God sent.
Register today at EncounterConference.org. That's EncounterConference.org. This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart-friendly, ride-your-bike-everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort-style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at avemaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
Was Jesus' risen body the same body He dwelled in while living on earth? According to the Catholic Catechism, it was the same body that was crucified, but it was glorified and different in profound ways from the risen body of Lazarus, which Jesus brought forth from the tomb. Lazarus returned to his same earthly life with the same limitations he had when he left it. Jesus rose with new powers. His body was no longer confined to time and space. He could appear and disappear at will. He could walk through doors. He could also eat and drink, as he did with the apostles, to prove to them that he was not a ghost. He could appear in whatever guise he chose, as he did with Mary Magdalene when she thought he was the gardener. The reality of the resurrection of the body seemed an impossibility to the disciples. They needed the added impetus of God's grace to accept and believe such a reality. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pacwa.
Within the people of life and the people for life, that's who we are, the people of life and the people for life, part of our self-identity. The family has a decisive responsibility. This responsibility flows from its very nature as a community of life and love, founded upon marriage and from its mission to guard, reveal, and communicate love. The family and marriage has a mission to guard love, to protect it from false forms of love, from false uses of people, using people and abusing them. It also is to reveal love and communicate love. This is part of the family's and marriage's purpose. You reveal love to the world. You know, people say, oh, marriage is just a piece of paper. That's baloney. This is you saying to the public, I'm loving my wife and my husband and my children till death do us part.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. May 29th would have been the 150th birthday of G.K. Chesterton. 100 years ago, he predicted the coming of a new Dark Ages. And we have indeed arrived at the point where we have detail of the sinning and denial of the sin. And we'll be talking with Dale Alquist about the legacy of G.K. Chesterton. But I'd like to begin by just talking about the man's faith. As I mentioned in the open, in his work, Why I Am a Catholic, it's a short essay, he states that the church is not merely armed against heresies of the past or even of the present, but equally against those of the futures. Chesterton was a man who, in his journalistic integrity and his journalistic pursuits, understood that truth was timeless. Truth had an abiding quality. To Chesterton, the power of truth to overcome error transcended the presence of the truth in that time. In other words, because of its absolute quality, truth was true, is true, and will always be true, regardless of when it is spoken. So, again, when asked the question, why I am a Catholic, he answers, the difficulty of explaining why I am a Catholic is that there are 10,000 reasons, all amounting to one, that Catholicism is true. And he goes on to say, I could fill all my space with separate sentences, each beginning with the words, it is the only thing that, and he gives some examples. For instance, it is the only thing that really prevents a sin from being a secret. Unlike the vast majority of Protestant denominations, and other religions for that matter, that argue for a kind of privacy to the moral failings of the individual, the Catholic faith calls and beckons to its faithful to run to the great tribunal of mercy that is the confessional. Chesterton also says, it is the only thing in which the superior cannot be superior, in the sense of supercilious. He says that it is the only thing that frees a man from the degrading slavery of being a child of his age. It is the only thing that talks as if it were the truth, as if it were a real messenger refusing to tamper with a real message. It is the only type of Christianity that really contains every type of man, even the respectable man. And one of the final reasons he gives, it is the only large attempt to change the world from inside, working through wills and not laws. And he goes on from there. Now, few people of this age have made themselves experts of the writings of G.K. Chesterton, and Chesterton evangelists, so to speak, other than Dale Alquist. Dale, as I mentioned before, is considered one of the world's leading authorities on the life and writings of Chesterton. Author of The Everlasting Man, a guide to Chesterton's masterpiece, he is the president of the Society of G.K. Chesterton, editor and publisher of Gilbert magazine, creator and host of EWTN's long-running series G.K. Chesterton, The Apostle of Common Sense, and the founder of the Chesterton Schools Network. Dale, how are you doing?
Well, I'm just great. I'm still enjoying celebrating Chesterton's 150th birthday from yesterday.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I find in you a kindred spirit. He is possibly my favorite classical author, although I might be stretching that a little because I do have some other authors that would give him a run for his money in my mind. Nonetheless, let's talk about the great legacy of this man. You essentially call him constantly the Apostle of Common Sense, and rightly so. But let's give our listeners an understanding as to why that is.
Well, you know, common sense is the truth that we all know to be true, but we forgot that it was true until someone brings it out to us. And I think what Chesterton is the master of is explaining to us the things that we already know, explaining to us the obvious, pointing out the obvious. It's why he's such a good mystery writer, because what mystery writers do is they lay a clue out in front of you, and somehow you don't see it until they let you see it. And Chesterton's essays and writings do the same thing. All of a sudden there's this shock of surprise, and it's something that you go, oh, yes, of course. But of course that's right. I knew that. And that's the common sense thing. Chester says common sense is in our bones. It's something right. God has given us. And, the equivalent of it is something like natural law, but it almost pervades more than that. It goes into some of the creases that natural law doesn't even reach.
Right. I hear what you mean. Now, to flow from there, I want to address exactly what you just said, which is that you have your fiction authors, and they're masterful storytellers, they're masterful narrators of a particular tale. but that doesn't make them in any way good commentators when it comes to engaging truth qua truth. And then you've got your commentators who are lucid presenters of the truth, systematic in their organization of thought, but ask them to write out a tale and spin a yarn in the interest of teaching that truth, and you know they'd fall short. Chesterton was a master of both. He truly, sincerely yeah. was great at both of that.
Yeah, and I'd have to say he was sort of a master of every genre of writing that he touched, because he was also an accomplished poet, and you know, whatever subject he tackled, he would shed light on it. He always gave us a deeper and wider vision of whatever it was he was talking about. But yes, the fact that he could write fiction with such engagement and nonfiction with such an absolute compelling argument that every time he'd make it, Chesterton, he really does. But I think he uses one quality in the other genre, and that's why he's so good at it.
Right, right, exactly. And at the same time, he has this kind of universal appeal of quality. It was his epistemology. This was a man who grounded his way of thinking in the absolute ideals of truth. It wasn't that he allowed himself to be swayed by particular philosophical nuances of different ages. It's that he was a true student of the truth, and so that permeated all of his writings.
Yes, you know, the fact that he wrote this book on Thomas Aquinas, which, you know, takes on the great Catholic philosopher, really the pinnacle of Catholic philosophy, and writes with such ease about Thomas Aquinas, and in a very short book, condenses Thomism to the point where one of the greatest Thomists of all time, Etienne Gilson, said, this is the best book I've ever written on Thomas Aquinas. and Gilson said that what Chesterton does is he reasons from the truth, whereas the rest of us are reasoning towards the truth. I mean, obviously, God gave him just imbued him with a deep and profound and heavenly wisdom, as he did with Thomas Aquinas. They were drinking from the same well, and they shared this with their readers and with the rest of us, but they do it with such humility and such a gentle spirit. That's what makes them so attractive.
Right. One of those things that people marvel at is that his work, Orthodoxy, is one of those books that has been and continues to be in print. It is absurdly popular. I don't know a single person who's serious about reading classical literature who hasn't read Orthodoxy, not just Chesterton's fictional work. There's a kind of universal appeal to the book. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think the other great thing about that book that we have to add before we ever try to answer it is that it's a book you can return to again and again. It's a book that never gets old. No matter how many times you read it, it will still produce new fruit. And so what Chesterton does in that book is it takes an utterly fresh approach to defending the faith. And, of course, as a lot of people know and as a lot of people don't know, he wrote this book before he was Catholic. And there's nothing in the book that indicates that he's not Catholic. I always challenge my students to find a sentence to indicate that the author is not Catholic. So he's very Catholic in his thinking. He's defending the Apostles' Creed, but he's doing it by first saying, look, here's what modern philosophy has given us. It's given us madness and self-destruction.
Right.
So let's look at a different approach that is sane, and the one that we've dismissed over the years, and let's see if this will bring us to a light that doesn't destroy us. And of course he does it with the wonder of taking us into fairy tales and you know, basic things that we understand from childhood, and we realize these are profound truths that still inform us. And then of course he takes us through paradox, he takes us through history. And he does it in just such short order, one firebomb after another.
Right.
The only problem reading that book is that you underline the whole thing and you realize, I don't know what I just read.
Yeah. Well, you wind up underlining the entire book because nearly every sentence is that profound. So in the early part of the book, I want to quote from it here. This is in chapter 4 of the book. I remember Orthodoxy was actually my first work of Chesterton's that I ever picked up. I know he was a master fiction writer, but it was Orthodoxy first, and then after that, St. Thomas Aquinas. And it would be a very long time before I picked up any of his fictional works, and the first one I picked up was The Man Who Was Thursday. I've been told that my order of reading Chesterton is rather odd. So what's your comment on that?
Well, I can tell you that I don't think anybody that I've met has found the right order. I know I also had the wrong order when I started with The Everlasting Man, which I wouldn't recommend anybody starting with The Everlasting Man, and yet that got me totally hooked on Chesterton. And my second book was St. Francis of Assisi, and remember, I wasn't Catholic. so wow. I'm reading these books that are just doing a complete new number on me. So yes, Mark, your reading order that you've chosen is odd, but so is everyone else's.
You know, that puts me in good company and makes me feel better about myself. So I remember as I was reading Orthodoxy, there was this one quote. I could tell immediately the book was very well-written, very lucid, very systematic, but hitting this quote in Chapter 4 made me realize that this book was brilliant, that there would be few others like it. It's the one where he talks about how God is younger than we are. He says, children have abounding vitality, they are in spirit fierce and free, they always say, do it again. And I'm skipping forward here. He says, it's possible that God says every morning, do it again to the sun, and every evening, do it again to the moon. And it may not be automatic necessity that makes all daisies alike. It may be that God makes every daisy separately. He has the eternal appetite of infancy. We have sinned and grown old, our Father is younger than we. So just comment on that, Dale, like the sheer poetic brilliance of the man in presenting deep theological truths.
Yes, and of course the paradox. He takes the way you think you understand something and just turns it completely on its head.
That's right.
Because, you know, the proper way to see the world is to see it upside down, and then you get everything into this proper perspective. He says that's why St. Peter was blessed by dying upside down, because he could see the world that was just as it was supposed to be seen, with everything hanging on the dependence of God, you know? And so
right.
So what he does in this passage is he makes you exult in monotony. Because he says, children are strong enough to exult in monotony, and so is God. Nothing gets old for God, whereas we, with our weak spirits, we let ourselves get tired of the same thing, whereas the same thing that God does is glorious. Like each sunrise and each sunset is glorious because God has done it all over again.
Right. And I love that you brought that up, Dale, and we could continue on and on. This was a truly invigorating conversation. Thank you for joining us. We've just been talking about G.K. Chesterton and how we just celebrated his 150th birthday. My guest, Dale Ahlquist, considered one of the world's leading authorities on the life and writings of G.K. Chesterton. Stay tuned as we round off this hour. I'm Marcus Peter for Cresta in the Afternoon.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John 6, verses 48 to 58. Jesus says, I am the bread of life. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness, and they died. This is the bread, meaning me. This is the bread which comes down from heaven, that a man may eat of it and never die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread which I shall give for the life of the world is my flesh. At which the Jews disputed among themselves, saying, how can this man give us his flesh to eat? They're scandalized by this. How is it that we're not? How is it that we just hear this and go, oh yeah, I know that passage? They're just outraged and at least perplexed. Sane people, inspired teachers, wise men, prophets don't say things like this.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Isn't it awesome that we today do not recognize his presence in the Eucharist? Is it because we really don't go to him in humbleness of heart and say, Lord, I don't believe, help my unbelief. Lord, I want to see you. I want to recognize you. I cannot live without you. Are we saying that?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon, rounding off this hour today's program. We just had this invigorating conversation with Dale Ahlquist about G.K. Chesterton. And one of my favorite quotes from Chesterton comes from What's Wrong with the World. And he says this: the Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It's been found difficult and left untried. Chesterton was masterfully aware of the fact that the demands placed on us by the law of the gospel, the law of charity, is nothing short than the call to make a complete gift of ourselves to others. And yet, those who do find themselves happier than anyone else, simply because this is why we were made. In Chesterton's own words, one of the chief uses of religion is that it makes us remember of our coming from darkness. We were created by God. I'm Marcus Peter for Cresta in the Afternoon.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.